Hello, hello. You're listening to the Goggler Podcast. Bahir and Uma with you. Today, we are going to be reviewing the brand new movie from Guillermo del Toro. This one's called Nightmare Alley. It is his first film since Shape of Water, the Oscar-winning Shape of Water. This one's got a stellar lineup. It's got Bradley Cooper, Cate Blanchett, Toni Collette, Willem Dafoe, Richard Jenkins, Rooney Mara, Ron Perlman, and David Strathairn. It is based on a 1946 novel by William Lindsay Gresham, and it's been made into a movie before, in 1947, with Tyrone Power. It kind of tells the story of... Is it too reductive for me to say that it kind of tells a story of carny life?
I think it's not, but it's not
just that.
It's not just that. It's the story of Bradley Cooper within carny life, I think, as well. Yeah.
It's about the dark descent of man into, you know, fame and glory and the price of it and...
Yeah.
Our fighting our inner demons and egos and all of that stuff, right? It's a very...
Yes.
It's a very Guillermo del Toro themed film. Like, all of his obsessions with monsters are still there, only they're not gilled or horned.
Yeah.
They're our dark human desires, right? That's the monster. And the opening sequence of this movie, and I'll tell you why I love this movie. The opening sequence of this movie begins with Bradley Cooper dragging a body across a room, dumping it into a hole in the floor, and then setting the place on fire. And within the first few minutes of that film, it kind of tells you everything you need to know about Bradley Cooper. Because you're like, oh, wait, this is a bad guy. Someone's dead. He's burning the evidence. What is going on? There's some moral ambiguity here. And yet, the rest of the 150 minutes of this film, you are still left wondering whether he is a good guy or a bad guy. Like, you are sympathetic towards him. You are empathetic towards him. Despite the fact that everything points to the fact that this is a very selfish and sometimes cruel individual.
For me, that opening sequence didn't quite elicit the same reaction. I think mostly because I had just watched the new Ty Sheridan series, 1888, I think it's called. So the opening of that show is almost, I wouldn't say identical, but it's similar in that our main character, or one of our main characters, also burns down his house with the body of his wife and his children in it, and his daughter in it, right? In that case, it was a disease that he had to get, you know, it was 1888, diseased bodies, right? Just burn it and be done with it, right? That kind of situation. So initially I was like, oh, maybe he didn't die under questionable circumstances.
Maybe it was the plague. Yeah.
Maybe it was the plague and Bradley Cooper's character is trying to stop it from getting or ravaging the village, whatever. So I didn't quite immediately fall into that. But I agree with you in that the movie never, well, right until when it is obvious, the movie sort of still plays back and forth with the idea of whether Bradley Cooper's Stanton Carlyle is a villain or the hero of this piece, right? Whether he's a good guy or a bad guy. Guillermo del Toro shoots it in a way where you are always left wondering. He never gives him a hero's shot. It's always a little questionable. The music plays into that as well. But I didn't quite fall in love with this movie the same way you did, I think.
For me, I really did enjoy this. I mean, we were talking about House of Gucci and how it's an adult drama that we don't necessarily see on screen anymore. And I think the popular thinking is that, and I've seen a lot of people say this over the last year especially, is that, oh, you know, cinema's reserved for the bright big blockbusters, the MCU movies, the spectacles, right?
Yeah.
And two of the three movies that we've seen over the last week and a half, I think proves otherwise. One is this movie, and the other one is The French Dispatch. Because I think with a Wes Anderson movie, you need a screen that big to notice all of the cool, beautiful, intricate shit that he's put on it.
Yes, yes.
And even with something like Nightmare Alley, there is an attention to detail in the production design of this movie. It's very Guillermo del Toro. It feels like a completely immersive world that you're inside immediately.
Yes, and like House of Gucci, everything's sumptuous.
Yes.
You know, House of Gucci takes you to the Italian countryside. I can't remember where they were. And in this one, it really sort of, you really dive into, like what you were saying in the beginning, carny life, right? In this sort of early 1950s period where the carnival rolling into town was a big deal. And them, you know, literally dropping it after the run and leaving for the next spot, right? So there's a sumptuousness in that. You feel the rain, you feel the mud on your boots. And I think TV will never do that for you. I think it's only in the big halls of a cinema, in the darkened rooms, that you get that feeling. And I completely agree with you. I think everything in here is trademark Guillermo del Toro. The mood of this one, right? It's got that Pan's Labyrinth thing of like, something's not quite right. I don't know what it is.
Throughout the whole movie, you're on edge, right? Because there's a tension.
Yes, yeah.
And you're waiting for the other shoe to drop, but you don't know what that shoe is. You don't know what it is and when it's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah, you don't know that it's a shoe or a gun or or someone's handbag. You know, it's such sumptuousness. I think this is my fault. I went into this movie by Guillermo del Toro called Nightmare Alley, expecting monsters, hoping for monsters, right?
Because right.
that's what I love from a Guillermo del Toro movie. When what he did with The Shape of Water was to make a monster movie that isn't about a monster. It's about humans. It's about falling in love.
It's a fairy tale.
It's a fairy tale, right? The human connection, the human emotion. Whereas this one, he flips that by putting real humans, but making them find their inner demons, they find their inner monsters and develop that monster, which is what Bradley Cooper's character does over the course of this film, I think. But no, it's beautiful movie, you know?
Oh no, I think that's the absolute minimum bar with a Guillermo del Toro film at this point, yeah. Right? I mean, he is one of those directors who is right up there with J.J. Abrams and Steven Spielberg, and like we expect an absolute minimum from them. And yes. And I think given his style and his approach and his aesthetic, I think production design is something that he's always had, like Pan's Labyrinth, the Hellboy movies, he's always had a keen eye for that. And he creates very impressive worlds. Yes. Within his films. And I think that's something that's true even for a movie like Nightmare Alley, where there aren't any real monsters. It's very film noir. The way the kind of plot plays out as well is very similar. I have to say, I haven't seen the 1947 Tyrone Power version, and I do want to go and watch it. There have been some people who say, oh, you know, we prefer the original, but of course there are always people who will say that.
Yes.
This is, without a doubt, Bradley Cooper's movie. It is the rise and fall of Bradley Cooper, right? And the message of this movie does resonate with a modern audience. So even though the movie feels old-fashioned in a sense, we don't have carnivals and circuses like that anymore, right?
There are entire generations who have never visited a traveling carnival.
Yeah, exactly. And yet, the kind of, you know, it's one part gothic romance, one part like noir thriller. It's almost a small element of a heist film in there. There's a lot of these. Yeah, there are a lot of these small genre conventions that he plays with. But I think Del Toro is the kind of person that can weave them all together so it makes sense. Like none of it felt jarring. And the message of the movie will speak to anyone. Like I think you can immediately relate to what he's trying to say in this film. And we won't give it away because that kind of undermines the big twist of the film, or the big story twist. It's more of a character twist, sorry, not a story twist. It's not like I see dead people.
Bradley Cooper doesn't turn out to be an actual monster. He doesn't unzip his human skin and become an actual monster.
Correct.
No, it's not that. Yeah, it's not that kind of twist. I'm only going on the memory of how I felt when we left the cinema right now, right? And I think as we talk about it, and I'm thinking to myself, why didn't I enjoy this? Because it has all the elements of things I should enjoy. I think, again, like I said earlier, it was my mistake because I was coming into it hoping, expecting monsters. But there aren't any. Or not the monsters I was hoping for. And this movie moves. you know, yeah. this movie freaking moves, right? From
it's not short. It's 2 hours and 30 minutes. So.
It's also a fairly long one, but it moves. There's a lot of story here to tell because Bradley Cooper's character sort of goes from that opening sequence, which, by the way, I haven't said it yet, but is beautifully put together. There's some flashing editing that they do there, which is just sumptuous. It's a Guillermo del Toro movie. It's beautiful.
It's also without dialogue, right? I mean, you're waiting quite a while before yeah. Bradley Cooper says his first lines, and so yes. much so that when he does, it is incredibly impactful. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also a big release, right? Because you've just, the movie opens with this really dark, moody, really sort of arresting image of Bradley Cooper dragging a body into a hole and lighting it on fire. That imagery, which is then left to burn in your brain, essentially, while he then travels to his next destination. Like you said, completely without dialogue, you know? I think even the music was very minimal here at this point. I think it's not, it doesn't sort of tell you what to feel yet. It sort of really lets you hang there in the tension of the moment.
There are phenomenal performances by everyone in this film. I mean, I love David Strathairn in everything, I think.
Yes.
I love his voice. I love his demeanor. He's fantastic. Willem Dafoe's great. Cate Blanchett's fantastic. She plays such a great femme fatale in this. Like, the way she carries herself, it feels like Guillermo del Toro just gave her a bunch of 1950s movies and went, do this.
There's a thing that people forget about the idea of a femme fatale, that that person cannot be a fresh-faced ingenue. You don't buy it if Rooney Mara yes. was trying to play the femme fatale, right? In this right. kind of movie, you know what I mean?
Right.
You have to have that ability to play your sex appeal, to play your intelligence card, to play your personality just by standing there in a pencil skirt and just grab that camera, you know? There's something that she does in this, which is completely different from the last time we just saw her, which was in Don't Look Up. Here, Cate Blanchett really just gets down that femme fatale thing. And it's also a great balance between her and Bradley Cooper.
Judging this performance, Bradley Cooper's performance, I think this might get him a nomination for the Oscars. It might actually be that long overdue win. You know, he's been nominated 8 times, like 4 times for actor nominations and then... whether supporting or best actor, and then also adapted screenplay for Star is Born. He was also nominated as a producer for Star is Born, Joker, and American Sniper. So, you know, 8 Oscar noms. He hasn't won a single one.
Really?
And yes, in all of those movies, Silver Linings Playbook, American Hustle, American Sniper, and A Star is Born, I think he had exceptional performances. But I have a feeling this one is the kind of thing that Hollywood likes because it is very Hollywood. It is this yeah. rise and fall of man type story. But
it's a very Americana story, right? That carnival thing, you know, which is something we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, absolutely right. I was thinking about how nobody makes these kinds of movies anymore, and that in itself is a good reason for you to go and watch it in the big screen. It feels like, yeah. in the same way, when we get a Wes Anderson movie, it is only Wes Anderson that is making that sort of movie.
Yes. Like,
sometimes people might try and emulate a scene or two yeah. in their movie when the way they frame a character or a shot, but Wes Anderson is the only guy who's making 2-hour versions of it.
And you're not feeling gimmicky.
And it's the same with Guillermo del Toro in that the way he is completely committed to these stories, whether it's if you go back and watch the first two Hellboy movies, the original ones with Ron Perlman, like, there is a real joy in his creation of these monsters. He loves these monsters, and they're genuine characters. They're not just big bads for the hero to fight.
And I mean, you can even see that in Pacific Rim, you know, the kaijus are not just monsters that show up that these big robots have to punch down, right?
You just mentioned the name and I want to watch Pacific Rim again.
Pacific Rim is a great fucking movie. All right. Guillermo del Toro spends as much time with the characters trying to figure out the kaiju as they do with the robots. In fact, they might spend less time with the robots because we never get really a big story about how the robots were built. There's just a little exposition off of a TV screen at some point. Yeah. But we spend a lot of time in trying to figure out what the deal is with these kaijus, right? And I think that's something Guillermo del Toro does very well. I keep going back to Penn's Labyrinth. It's that,
yeah,
that there's a the monster with the eyeballs in the hand. I'm sure he's got a name, I don't know it. It's not just for dramatic effect. You know, there's a point to it that it takes the lead character to a different space, different place, different mindset. There's a reason for everything. And I think Nightmare Alley, every scene is a reason. There's a reason for that scene to be there. When Bradley Cooper's character first meets Toni Collette, there's a reason for that to happen. There's a reason for David Strathairn's character to leave. And there's a line there that they say that comes back later in his actions. And you get that. It's not, nothing's just a throwaway line, you know?
No, it's very, very tight filmmaking. Like
very tight filmmaking. Yeah.
Yeah. Every piece of dialogue belongs. No scene is wasted.
Mm.
And when the climax happens, even though you might see it coming, I think it doesn't matter if you figured out the twist. What's important is that the ride is so entertaining that you're there for it.
But also, just like I will not pretend to be one of those people who saw it coming. I didn't. There were other people in the hall that were laughing because they saw it. I didn't see it. I didn't get it until we left the hall. I was just like, oh, wait, that's what happened. There's a deliciousness to the fall happening, to it happening, to that twist happening. You're sitting there going, don't do it. Don't take that step because you know it's going to go. You don't take that step. You know it's going to go. He's placed the character in such a position that that's the only place he can go. And that was a place that both the character and now the audience know was going to happen anyway. And that was beautiful, right? It's a big, long con of a chess move.
Nightmare Alley is only playing in TGV cinemas. It is an exclusive to TGV cinemas. But go watch it at the movies. Like, we honestly didn't think we were going to get this because, you know, cinemas had just reopened. And I guess it was widely believed that they want the big blockbusters because they got to try and recoup some of all of that money that they lost during the pandemic. And we thought it would take a lot longer for these talkies to come back. You know, when cinema shut down, just before that, I guess in 2018, 2017, 2016, we suddenly started getting all of the movies that we never used to, right? Because I think there was a developing maturity in our market that they felt that they could bring in these award season films, if you will. And I remember just before cinemas shut down for good, like 2018, 2019-ish, into 2020, there was one year when we actually got to see all of the Oscar-nominated films in Malaysian cinemas. Like, we had that opportunity. Because I remember when we were talking about it in the past, when you used to talk about and review Oscar season and award season, we used to be like, you know, we've just seen the trailer because there's no way we can watch this film. But it reached that point when we were getting everything.
I mean, we considered ourselves lucky if a nominated movie was to then show up on our shows. You know,
correct.
That was something to look forward to, yeah.
I know we're not getting Last Night in Soho, we're not getting Licorice Pizza, but I'm so happy that we have the opportunity to watch something like Nightmare Alley on our screen. So we highly encourage you to go and see it on the big screen and then talk to us about it. You know how to get in touch. podcast@goggler.my. All of our social media feeds are @gogglermy and also the Goggler hotline, 012-524-5208. Drop us a line, share your thoughts. Also, if you write some of your mini reviews on Instagram, tag us and we'll share it on our platform as well. We've had a lot of followers doing that with both Nightmare Alley and House of Gucci. Keep those coming in. Thank you so much for listening. This is the Goggler Podcast.